Chapter 4. House of the Hydra, Monlo Harbour, Nerth. Continuous. The pounding blood vessels in Grammaticus's head felt as if they were about to burst. His windpipe had closed. "Let me go," he sent desperately. The steel-gloved hand released its grip, and Grammaticus fell awkwardly onto the tiled floor. Hurt and dazed, he forced his mind to work fast. His eyes were becoming accustomed to the cold, blue darkness of the chamber. He could see the giant shadow of his captor and the hot red glow of a visor, but he could not read a mind. Something was screening it. Nevertheless, his urgent commands were getting through. "Step back and keep your hands away from your weapons." The giant shadow above him took a step backwards.
"Stop him doing that," the shadow's deep voice growled.
There was someone else in the room, in this bolt hole that had not been safe at all. Grammaticus saw the second person as a hooded figure, though he could not actually see the man with his eyes. The figure was hooded in his mind. Grammaticus tried to rise. A piercing liquid squeal, like a wet finger sliding on glass, stabbed into his neocortex. Pain fired through his autonomic nervous system and sizzled down his spine. He grunted and fell back against the wall.
"He is fierce, strong, and well protected," the hooded figure said out loud.
"Too much for you?" asked the giant shadow.
"No."
"Then keep him down."
The squeal increased in power. Grammaticus convulsed.
"We are going to have a conversation, John," the giant shadow said, bending down and looming close. "I want some truth out of you, or so help me, I'll simply crush your psych-cursed skull." "Yes? Are we clear?"
Grammaticus nodded. The agony was immense. He could feel blood running out of his nose and over his top lip.
"Good. Shear is going to release you. That will be nice, won't it? When Shear releases you, no mind tricks. Are we still clear?"
"Yes," Grammaticus hissed, his throat bruised and sore.
"Let him go, Shear," the giant commanded.
The squeal went away and took the worst of the pain with it. Grammaticus slumped forwards onto his hands, gasping.
"Lights," the giant's voice ordered.
There was a brief pulse of telekinetic effect, and several dozen wax candles arranged around the room spontaneously lit, a decent pyrokinetic display. The light from the candles was soft and yellow. It showed Grammaticus a shuttered greeting room, typical of Nerthine houses, with a faience-tiled floor and mosaic walls that snagged the candlelight like water. It also showed him his antagonists, an armoured transhuman giant and a standard human in black whose face Grammaticus couldn't see, even though the man wore no physical mask or hood.
"Your name is John Grammaticus?" the giant asked.
"If you say so."
"I can get Shear to start again, if you prefer."
Grammaticus shook his head. Spots of his blood dappled the tiles around him.
"Yes, my name is John Grammaticus. You already know that." "Look at me," the giant commanded.
Grammaticus looked up. The giant was clad in power armor, the metal and ceramic war gear of an Imperial Astartes. The armor was a rich purple with silver edging. Green heraldry had been marked on the shoulder plates. The helm was the very latest, Baleen Snout version. Dull red light shone inside the visor slit. To the left of the towering Astartes stood the mind-hooded figure, small by comparison.
"No. Me," said the Astartes. "Look at me. Ignore my psyche."
"Better." "I..." Grammaticus began.
"Quiet,"
said the Astartes, raising a massive index finger. You're going to tell me what I want to know, not what you want to say. Grammaticus nodded. You've been looking for me. That's why you keep coming into this city. You knew I'd be here. Grammaticus nodded again. How did you know that? Because we invited you here, Grammaticus replied. You invited me here? Who's we? The cabal I work for. The Astartes turned to look at the hooded figure. Once again, he said. The squeal speared into Grammaticus's head and made him shriek. What is the cabal? The Astartes asked. Grammaticus sobbed. He could barely answer. They are eternal and they... That's not really very good, said the Astartes. Maybe I should just shoot you. The cabal is the only hope, Grammaticus pleaded. Go on. Please. Stop it now, Shear, the giant instructed. The squeal died back. Whose only hope? Asked the Astartes. Mine. Yours. Mankind's, Grammaticus sighed. You're talking about the Imperium? Grammaticus shook his head. Broader than that, the species. The Imperium is the species, the giant replied. You don't really believe that, do you? Grammaticus asked. The worlds you've seen? The worlds you've been obliged to bring to compliance? Worlds like this one? Sapling shoots of human culture? Cuttings from the root plant? The human race is far, far more than the militant tribe that is spilling out from Terra to accomplish the Emperor's vision. The Astartes drew his bolt gun. Grammaticus did not actually see it happen. One moment the hefty weapon was holstered at the giant's hip, the next it was in his steel fist, aimed at Grammaticus's head. Are you insane? The giant asked. Are you blind? Look at me. I am an Astartes warrior, oathed to this moment and sworn to serve the Emperor. Why would you say something that sounds so perilously close to treason? I apologize if that's how it sounded. I meant no disrespect. The bolt gun remained, aimed at him. You said this cabal of yours invited us here. Explain that. Grammaticus swallowed. Of all the Astartes legions, the Cabal believes the Alpha Legion to be most receptive to its message. Why? In all truth, sir, I do not know. I am simply a go-between. The Cabal wanted the Alpha Legion to become involved in the Compliance War here on Earth so that it could see the evidence for itself. See what, John? Grammaticus straightened slightly and looked boldly at the muzzle of the gun aimed at his face. What was at stake? The real enemy. Not the Nerthine, but the primordial annihilator that holds sway over them. The Astartes slowly lowered his weapon. You're talking about their warp magic. It's not, Grammaticus began. May I stand, sir? This floor is cold. The snouted helm nodded. Grammaticus rose to his feet. The Astartes still towered over him. It's not magic. It's not some fanciful trickery. It's the visible manifestation of a deep power, a universal pervasive abomination. Chaos, the Astartes replied. If that is what your masters wanted us to see, they have wasted your errand. We already know of chaos, and have numbered it in the litany of Xenos hazards. Grammaticus shook his head sadly. The simplest name for it is chaos. You've numbered it in the litany of Xenos hazards, have you? Then you know it only as a child knows the world. It has always been and will always be, And compared to it, nothing, not mankind, not the Imperium, not the Emperor's mighty design, is of any consequence. Unchecked, it will poison and stagnate the galaxy. Fueled and driven, it will destroy everything. The Cabal wanted you to see it properly, to see it with your own eyes, so that you would take its message seriously. He paused. And it needed you to see it quickly.
Why? Asked the giant.
Because a great war is coming.
A war? Against what?
Against yourselves, said Grammaticus. The giant Astartes stared at Grammaticus for a moment. Grammaticus heard the dull click of his helmet vox operating. A private conversation was taking place. Grammaticus waited. The candle flames trembled. A tiny green house lizard scuttled across the tiled floor and upper wall. The giant turned back to look at Grammaticus.
"What is the message your cabal wants us to take so seriously?" he asked.
"I don't know. I was simply sent here to propose a dialogue." The Astartes looked over at the mind-hooded man.
"I am called for," he said. "Take him to the parlor and stay with him. Do not allow him to play any tricks."
The psyker nodded. The Astartes went over to the wooden gate, unbolted it, and stepped out into the sunlight. Just before the gate closed, Grammaticus saw that the intercoiled green reptiles painted on the wood were dragons, each one with three serpentine heads. Hydras.
"This way," said the psyker to Grammaticus.
He followed the psyker through the rooms of the house, rambling chambers and hallways that followed no more logical a scheme than the streets of Monlo. All the rooms were dark and shuttered, and dust sheets covered the few pieces of furniture. This was a place of convenience, Grammaticus decided, a safe house. He had been meant to open that painted gate all along. The psyker led the way with a single fluttering candle.
"You contrived to bring me here?" Grammaticus asked. "You baffled my mind and got me lost so I could be directed to this house?"
"Not on my own," the hooded man replied. "You are a powerful being. We've been aware of you these last few weeks, operating here, shadowing us, watching us. We thought it was time to ask why."
"You're not Astartes."
The man turned and looked back at him, but despite the candlelight, Grammaticus could still not resolve his face.
"The Alpha Legion uses any and all instruments to get its work done. I am honored to serve them."
The psyker took Grammaticus into a dark sitting room, where several low couches and upholstered stools had been brought into use, their dust sheets folded and put away. A golden ewer of nerthine wine, some small silver dish mazes, and an earthenware bowl of preserved fruit stood on an inlaid table. The psyker nodded slightly, and the many candles arranged around the room's surfaces spontaneously lit. The sudden light made a couple of little house lizards skitter into the shadows.
"I do hate lumen and glow-globe light," the psyker said. "It kills the darkness. Candles illuminate it."
"And darkness is just another instrument of the Alpha Legion?" asked Grammaticus. Though he could not see the man's face, Grammaticus understood that the psyker was smiling.
"You really have been watching us carefully, haven't you?" the psyker said.
"It's my job," Grammaticus replied.
"Help yourself to wine, to a bite of food," the psyker offered, sitting down on a couch and putting the candle he was carrying down on a low table.
Grammaticus poured some wine into one of the silver drinking bowls. He needed something to wash his mouth with, but would have preferred water. As he sipped from the mazer, he focused his limbic system to negate the effects of the alcohol. He took a seat opposite the psyker.
"You're called Shear, right?"
"Yes."
You're a gifted pyrokine. It's a technique that never manifested in me. Shear shrugged.
You get what you get, John. I'm far more impressed by your particular talent, logokinetic skill. That's rare.
You can read that in me?
Of course, said Shear. But I can't understand it. Is it any language, or just specific groups?
I've never encountered a tongue I couldn't master.
Including Xenos?
Grammaticus smiled. They're not so hard. It depends on the organ they use for speech. I can understand some, but I'm unable to respond in kind because I lack the necessary biology to manufacture reciprocal sounds, and some are just abstruse. The Eldar have a particular verb form that always trips me up.
And you can tell where a person is from just by their speech?
Shear asked, deftly switching from Low Gothic to Sinhala. Nice try, said Grammaticus in fluent Sinhala. But your palatal voicing gives you away. You are speaking Sinhala well, but I read Farsi vowels underneath and something else. You are Uzbek or Azerbaijani.
Uzbek.
And the something else, the long diphthongs, that's a trace of Mars, isn't it?
I spent 8 years growing up in the habitats of Epluvian Maximal. You're very good. I presume, as a result, you are very good at reading the truth.
Grammaticus nodded. I am. It is particularly hard to lie to me, a fact which I hope you'll mention to your masters when you report this conversation back to them. I excel at recognizing truth, so I am not unwittingly conveying someone else's lies to the ears of the Alpha Legion. Shear chuckled.
You may recognize the truth, John. We have no guarantee you are transmitting it.
That's a decent point, I suppose, Grammaticus replied, taking another sip from the mazer cradled in his fingers.
How did you invite them? Shear asked. They'll want to know.
It's taken about a decade, said Grammaticus. Agents like me have been planting seeds and suggestions for a while now. Using imperial codes and ciphers, we've logged reports and bulletins into the Crusade's data architecture, certain things that we thought would tantalize the Alpha Legion. We diverted a few orders, reversed a few command communiques. Little by little, we made sure that when the time came for the 670th Expedition to request assistance in prosecuting the Nerthine campaign, it would be the Alpha Legion that responded to Lord Commander Namat Jira's plea.
Great terror, Shear breathed. That's astonishing. The level of influence, of access, the strategy, the patience. Incredible. Such subtle manipulation.
That's the Cabal's way, Shear, Grammaticus replied. Strategy, subtle influence, the long view. They're very good at it. They've always been very good at it.
They could have simply asked.
Grammaticus laughed. It hurt his bruised throat. That's not their way. Besides, would the Alpha Legion have said yes?
Not in 1,000 years, Shear agreed. Look, I'd be careful how I explained that to them if I were you. The Alpha Legion prides itself on knowing everything. They prize knowledge above all things and hate the idea of anyone knowing more than they do. That's how they win their battles. In fact, the only thing they hate more is the idea that they're being manipulated.
So noted. Thank you. I had already foreseen that as a stumbling block. Grammaticus put the empty mazer down on the tray by the ewer. You're no slouches when it comes to manipulation, though. You got me today. From the moment I entered Mon Lo, you were misleading me, clouding my mind, pulling me to where you wanted me to be.
Well, not quite, said Shear.
Don't be so modest. You admitted it to me just now. Shear looked up at Grammaticus in the candlelight. His lack of a coherent face was hard to look at, but Grammaticus could read alarm.
John, I'm not being modest. Yes, we led you here, but only once we had located and identified you. That was just before you entered the Temple Square on Red Monitor Street. Before that, we weren't aware of you at all.
No, said Grammaticus. It was before that I... Shear got up.
John, are you telling me that you are being influenced from the moment you entered the city today?
I...
This is important, John. Was something on to you right from your point of entry?
Grammaticus swallowed. His guts suddenly felt as if they were full of ice. Yes, he said.
Damn, Shear murmured. That wasn't us. That wasn't us. They made you.
Shear, I...
Be quiet, please. We may have just been seriously compromised.
Shear walked over to the parlour door and bent his head, talking urgently into a Vox microbead. Grammaticus waited, his head spinning slightly. An awful creep of realization was coming over him. The Cabal and the Alpha Legion had not been the only forces playing games that morning. Shear looked over at Grammaticus, his conversation over.
"We're moving," he said. "We're getting out of here."
"What's going on?"
"It's as bad as I feared. The city's gone quiet. The Nerthine identified you and used you as a lure to draw us out."
"I'm so sorry," Grammaticus said.
"Your apology hardly counts for anything. Come on."
Footsteps were thumping up the hallway outside. The door opened and three men came in. Two were standard humans dressed in mail sleeves and head shawls, carrying crude pattern las carbines. The third, attired identically to the other two, was a gene-big beast lugging a bolter.
"We're quitting the house," the gene giant told Shear. "Is this the wretch who blew our operation?"
Without waiting for confirmation, the gene giant turned and advanced towards Grammaticus.
"Leave him, Herzog, please, sir," Shear called out. "He's valuable. Pech told me to watch him and keep him safe."
"Shame the rodent couldn't do the same for us," the gene giant growled. "All right, let's head out. Double time."
They flanked Grammaticus and hurried him down the hall. Scared as he was, Grammaticus sorted the data that had just come his way. The gene giant was called Herzog, apparently. Grammaticus could smell the whiff of Astartes about him. The other two, the male-sleeved, standard humans, suggested to Grammaticus that the Alpha Legion used all sorts of non-Astartes operatives to accomplish their missions, not just specialists like the Psyker Shear. What had Shear said? The Alpha Legion uses any and all instruments to get its work done? Grammaticus risked a quick surface read of the men's minds and saw they were soldiers of the Imperial Army, though there was something definitely non-standard about the biological samples he was getting. He dared not risk a deeper probe. And that other thing Shear had said. Pech told me to watch him and keep him safe. He could only have meant the armored giant, but the giant had identified himself as Alpharius. Was that another lie? How did the names connect? They reached the ground floor of the house. Herzog raised a hand to activate his link. The shutters opened. They banged aside, one by one, opening each window in turn, spilling hot, hard daylight into the closed house. Grammaticus flinched at each opening, feeling the residual pulse of the telekinetic power responsible. A trio of minute green house lizards danced in over an open sill.
"Damn," Herzog murmured.
More lizards skittered in, running like water over the sills, some falling onto the floor with little plips. Inside 5 seconds, they were pouring in like a flood, thousands of them, rushing over the window ledges and under the doors, flowing as if dumped out of hand carts.
"Back up! Upstairs!" Herzog ordered.
They thumped back up the staircase. The tide of lizards behind them quickly covered the tiled floor of the hall and began to pour, like green water disobeying gravity, up the stairs. Grammaticus could feel a malevolence in the air, a pervading touch of cloying heat and rage, the trademark of an angry, potent psyker. "We're in trouble," he whispered. The others ignored him, except for Shear, who glanced in his direction. For a brief second, Grammaticus saw Shear's face, the face of a startled young man with fine features. Shear was so unnerved he was letting his psychhood slip. Rivers of pattering lizards were pouring in through the upper windows, too. The shutters on the first floor had been yanked open. Tiny, sinuous green shapes rippled across the sheet-wrapped furniture and spilled along the tiled flooring.
"Oh, hell's teeth!"
one of the mail-sleeved operatives gasped.
"Second floor," Herzog ordered. "Make for the bridge!"
Herzog's mind was unguarded by distraction. Grammaticus skimmed its surface and saw that the bridge was a brick walkway linking the house to its neighbour. He started to run. They all started to run. Behind them, the swarming lizards filled the hallways, making no sound except for the plick-plack of their billion sticky feet. The running men, led by the Astartes, reached the second floor. The torrent of lizards was running up the walls, coating the ceiling with a carpet of scurrying bodies.
"Arcus, delay them," Herzog yelled out.
"Why me?"
one of the mail-sleeved operatives wailed.
"Just do it. Broad burn."
The operative turned, adjusting his las carbine to the widest emission setting. He started to fire, blasting unfocused washes of energy back down the stairs, singeing and crisping the wriggling mat of advancing lizards. Tiny, smouldering bodies dropped off the ceiling and walls. The hand-painted wallpaper crisped. Arcus kept firing, cooking thousands of squirming shapes, adjusting his aim rapidly to check each front of the swarming plague in turn. It wasn't enough. It was never going to be enough. They reached him, and he screamed and jiggled as they rushed up his legs and his body, covering him. He started to flail wildly, enveloped by tiny, biting, snapping green shapes. He lost his footing and fell, crashing down the staircase into the main body of the green torrent. In seconds, his form was lost from view, submerged in the writhing flow. Ignoring the grim demise of his operative, Herzog ran down the hallway, his moving weight creaking the old floorboards. He reached a door and halted, preparing to kick it in. Before he could, the door splintered in towards him, throwing him backwards. A snout, 2 meters long, shoved its way through the shattered opening. Shear yelped. The crocodilian was a massive thing, the sort of creature that simply had no business existing on the second floor of a domestic house. It rammed its way forwards, its colossal skull swinging left and right as it came on. Its huge, scuted body and immense tail trailed back across the bridge into the neighbouring building. The house shook under its gigantic mass as it moved. Herzog tried to drag himself back out of its path. Shear retreated, slipping over on the scurrying house lizards that were darting underfoot. Grammaticus grabbed him and hauled him to his feet, smacking the wriggling, biting things off Shear's robe with his bare hands. The remaining operative fired twice at the advancing monster. The crocodilian lunged forwards, extending its white-scaled neck, and took the operative like a grazer at a waterhole, snatching him up in a huge V of jaws. The man tore open, screeching as the jaws shook him apart like a straw doll. Herzog, on his back, fired his bolt gun and blew out one of the crocodilian's eyes. It thrashed in pain, slamming its vast body to and fro into the walls of the bridge and the corridor, shattering plaster and shaking the building. The mangled corpse of the operative tumbled out of its jaws and it snapped forward, seizing Herzog by the leg. Mail rings cracked and pinged away as the gigantic teeth bit down. Herzog roared. Grammaticus had never heard an Astartes cry in pain before. He decided he never wanted to hear the sound again. He pushed Shear aside against the moving wall of lizards and adjusted his ring. It was an old-kind digital weapon, a gift from Gahet. He triggered it. An incandescent blue beam lanced out from it and exploded the crocodilian's brain case in a wet blast of meat, bone and tissue. "Come on!" Grammaticus yelled. Herzog pulled his leg free of the ruptured jaws and got to his feet. Limping, he led Grammaticus and Shear across the bridge. They had to clamber over the apparently endless bulk of the dead crocodilian. It was still twitching. They reached the stairs of the neighbouring house and headed down. Herzog's leg was badly lacerated from the bite, and he was faltering. Behind them they could hear the advancing patter of the lizard tide. The first few green shapes were appearing above them, scurrying out across the ceiling, some falling like drops of water down the stairwell around them.
"Where did you get that?" Herzog yelled at Grammaticus.
"What?"
"That weapon."
"Does it matter?"
"You could have used it on us earlier,"
Shear said, scrambling down the stairs beside Grammaticus.
"The fact that I didn't might persuade you that I'm serious," Grammaticus replied.
They snatched open the main street door of the house and came out into bright sunlight and into the middle of a gun battle. Two Astartes warriors in purple power armor, one of them, Grammaticus was certain, the giant who had questioned him earlier, were exchanging shots along the dusty sunlit street with gangs of Nerthadra ground troops. Crowds of braying Nerthine civilians were urging the Nerthadra on, hurling cobbles and other missiles. Half a dozen mail-sleeved operatives, anonymous in their desert shawls, were supporting the outnumbered Astartes. Lasrounds and ballistic loads streaked up and down the narrow thoroughfare.
"Pech!" Herzog called out.
The armored giant glanced around. So not Altharius, then, Grammaticus thought, unless Pech was some nickname or surname unknown to the Cabal.
"Get out, Thias," the giant yelled. "We'll hold them here and rendezvous as soon as we can." "For the Emperor, Pech,"
Herzog shouted, pausing to add his bolter fire to the fight for a moment.
"Let's go,"
he declared, turning to face Shear and Grammaticus. They began to run again, covering the sun-heated cobbles, the sounds of the firefight behind them echoing along the overhanging walls.
"Where to?"
Grammaticus found the courage to ask.
"To wherever is safe," Herzog replied.
He was still limping badly.
"I don't think there's anywhere safe for us in this town," Shear grunted.
"No, neither do I," agreed Herzog. "Thanks to him."
He glared at Grammaticus. "This was not my doing," Grammaticus insisted as he ran. He checked his stride suddenly, flinching as he sensed the stomach-churning ripple of psyker activity again. Shear had felt it too.
"What?"
he began. The street ahead of them split as if torn open by a fierce earthquake. The road surface burst upwards and cobblestones flew like hail. A vast monitor hauled itself up out of the ground in front of them, pulling its bulk free of the cloven street and the earth beneath. Cobblestones, hardcore and soil spilled out around it as it emerged. Its skull alone was the size of a life pod. Its tongue, long, dry and forked, flickered in and out of its extravagantly massive maw. The tongue was as pink as Nerthine silk. The monitor was covered in cherry red scales. They could smell the carrion stink of its jaws, feel the tremor of its advancing steps.
"Here be dragons," Grammaticus whispered.
"What?"
Shear yelled. "Here be dragons." It was no longer a quaintly phrased notation of warning, no longer the shorthand motto of man's ignorance of the darker places of his universe. Dragons were real, not ambiguous scrawls on fading maps. Grammaticus could see into it, past the giganticized body it wore, past the scale and flesh and muscle of the Varanidae genus form it had chosen or been instructed to take. He could see the absolute fury of its demon heart. Herzog began to fire, slamming bolt after bolt into the red monster's head. Blood splattered from the snout, and two or three teeth were blown out of their sockets. The dragon lunged. Shear screamed and lashed out with his pyrokinetic talent, and flames swirled along the reptile's back and flanks in wild, flaring streams. The immense beast began to thrash as its scales scorched. Flames travelled down its length, engulfing it in a molten inferno too bright to look at. Its whipping, burning body and tail convulsed furiously and smashed into the surrounding buildings, bringing down their facades in thunderous torrents of brick and dry mortar. Dust rose in solid, gagging walls. Grammaticus lost sight of Herzog and Scheer. He began to run. Behind him, the death throes of the burning dragon sounded as though they were demolishing the entire city. Grammaticus kept running. He didn't look back.